Hello, everybody. Stu Smith here, going live, taking some questions. But while we congregate, let's talk a little bit about stretching and why you need to do it. I don't know if you've ever been told stretching is bad or don't stretch before. I never stretch after I run. You've been told all those stories all your life. I have too. And I will tell you this. This is just my own personal experience, is that adding more stretching as I have aged has been life-changing. Now, that doesn't mean I wasn't flexible when I was younger. I just didn't need to stretch as much, right? So I wasn't sitting down as much. You know, I sit down at work and I type. In fact, right now I have a standing desk, so I try to break up my amount of sitting by anywhere from 50 to 75% less sitting than I normally would, you know, doing computer work or whatever. That has been probably one of the biggest helpers for me personally, is just not sitting all day at work. I don't know if you've heard the saying, sitting is the new smoking, and I truly believe it. Most people who work out regularly every day, and if they go sit for 8 hours in a work day or longer, it has a negative effect on, even if they're already exercising that day. So try to get up and move. Something I do when I am sitting is make sure I set a little timer that I have on my watch that about every 40, 45 minutes, I hop up, I walk upstairs, I walk back down, I stretch on the stairs, move around, walk in the backyard, get some fresh air, come back down, get to work. One, that helps with productivity, but it also just helps with hips getting tight, lower back getting tight. And all of that can be alleviated by stretching and moving. So yes, you can use static stretching and dynamic stretching together. I do all the time. I will tell you this, though. You will definitely want to warm up a little bit before you stretch. I think that out of all of the things that I have heard, the pros and cons of stretching over the years, and people saying that there's no proof that it prevents injuries, that there's no proof that it does this, but well, there is proof. In fact, you can go to a website called Stretching Research. Let me see what it is. Saw it the other day. I follow it up on Instagram. FlexibilityResearch.com. It's a really good one. Has some great things from it, not only from stress relieving and, you know, tension headaches, lower back pain, inflammation as well throughout the body, improved circulation. Let's talk about tactical stuff. Definitely helps with lower back pain after rucking. Also, if you're having a hard time treading or swimming quickly, chances are your mobility, flexibility, mobility needs to improve in order to you for you to get in that streamlined position or be able to do a proper kick or an egg beater kick because your hips, knees, and ankles are too tight. Or if you can't swim with fins because your ankles hurt too much, ankle mobility. You know, so stretching is the key to all that. You know, it's going to increase your flexibility, going to increase your range of motion for all those joints. And if you don't do it, you should. Period. The one thing I like about that flexibilityresearch.com is everything that I just said has backup studies to it, that it's not just some dude up here saying, hey, stretching, it helps me. It can help you too. There's actual science behind every one of those stretching benefits that I just said. you know, from better mood, increased serotonin levels, pain, reduced pain, all of that. So there you go. That's my warm up for you guys to start asking questions. I try to limit it to like a 5-minute little introduction talk and give it a title that catches people's attention, and then people can come here and ask questions throughout the next half hour, 45 minutes or so. So if you guys have questions, send them. If not, I have a few over here that I can grab, and we can start with the Q&A session. With the Q&A session over here. So I saw one the other day that I thought was pretty good. Most of these usually come with, hey, can you also critique my combat swimmer stroke or watch my tread? You know, if you have an underwater camera, get yourself treading. Happy to look at that stuff for our Tuesday show, which is nothing but swim critiques and discussing other activities regarding combat swimmer stroke and whatever questions you may have. But first, looks like we've got a question over here from Tristan. Are deadlifts necessary for strength training, or would just barbell squatting be fine to build strength for those like rucking and logs? I don't think they're absolutely necessary, but you should do squats, whether that's with a barbell, a sandbag, a weight vest. Lunges should be added in there too, but there should be a certain level of squatting that you can do, and it doesn't take much to do it. If you're doing workouts like the Murph, you're getting 300 squats in a workout, doing walking lunges with a sandbag. What else? Wall sits, that's a good one. Shoulder carry squats with a sandbag. I think all of those are really good activities, especially if you're talking about rucking and logs. If you're talking about a pure strength building activity, absolutely. If you want to put on strength, I would do it with a barbell squat, maybe even start off with kettlebell squats, you know, go a real deep kettlebell squat. But yes, I like them. Deadlifts, I think you asked deadlifts too. Are deadlifts necessary? I don't think they're necessary per se, but they are going to help you with certain lower back strength that barbells will do too. I personally like them. However, I don't go super heavy with them. I don't think you need to go super heavy with strength training and deadlifts or squats. 1.5 times your body weight is sufficient. If you can do that on top of a quarter mile of lunges with a Sam Baby, Murph level squat volume, you know, and shoulder squats for that matter. I think all of those are going to be sufficient for what you're trying to do, because you do need a foundation of strength, but it doesn't need to be a world-class level of strength. Like I squatted and deadlifted in my powerlifting days, and I didn't squat or deadlift for almost a year and a half before I went to Buds. And I just did squats, lunges, sandbags, things like that. Now that's me different. I had plenty of strength in my deadlifts and squats from powerlifting days. And even though I wasn't anywhere near my one rep maxes, when I went to Buds, I was still plenty strong enough. So there you go. Does that help you, Tristan? I definitely, yeah, if you can do deadlift for 1.5 times your body weight for 5 reps, I think that's plenty. Maintain that. But really start working your volume on leg work as well. Let's see. Heath says, morning, Stu Smith. This makes me think of physical therapy at the swimming pool, school for the deaf and adaptive sports. That can also benefit boot camp to better physical heights. Watched last night, Netflix, name of the movie, Physical 100. Got to see what the elite level athletes are doing. Have a good morning, physical fitness and workouts. Yeah. Yeah, I'll check that out. I'm curious. I always like to see what the human body is capable of doing. But one thing I want to warn anybody who is considering doing tactical fitness training for military, law enforcement, firefighters, and yes, even spec ops level fitness training, is that you don't need to be anywhere near a world-class athlete to do a spec ops job, right? Some of the fastest guys at Buds were running 6-minute miles, right? That's nowhere near whatever the sub 4-minute mile that is going on these days. You know, the guys, some guys never even deadlifted, or if they did deadlift, they were doing 1.5, 2 times their body weight, which, you know, if you look at deadlift world-class levels, not even close. You know, 600 pounds is not even close, which is way too much in my mind for, you know, some of these selection programs. What's another one? Swimming. Oh my God. I love watching the swimmers because I'm doing the math while they're doing their whatever swim it was. I saw like an 800 meter swim, and then they, you know, doing it in the time that most of my guys and myself can do 500 in. So they're lapping us like 3 times probably in a 500 meter swim, which is just insane. Don't need to be that good at swimming either. Let's see. Cole says, do you know about Knees Over Toe Guy? Yeah, follow him. I think he has some great program. If so, how do you feel about his programming for guys wanting to go through the pipeline, bulletproofing, shoulder, knees? I tell you what, I've had several guys that have been post-knee surgery, like ACL-level surgeries, do that program, you know, on top of working out with us too. And it was mostly they just supplemental, you know, his program into it, and have made it through Buds fine, even post ACL surgeries. So those guys will swear by it. We have a sled. In fact, I think I even posted it today up on Instagram. It's quite a funny picture actually, because one of my guys is one of my little guys is sitting on it. it's just kind of funny. So he's walking backwards with a sled, and one dude is sitting on the actual sled. He's a light guy, but anyway, yeah, we walk backwards with sleds and walk up hills backwards and do a lot of that stuff. So we go, when we run bleachers, we'll do the old Poliquin squat, you know, step down. That's a good one. So yeah, I'm a big fan of those things. I think they work really well. Put it this way, everybody that has had knee surgeries that I work with has been doing knees over toes stuff. In fact, we have one of my friends here who is listening has been doing knees over toes, and she is in her 60s and, you know, has bad knees, you know, as we all get, arthritic knees, and still muscling out knees over toe stuff. So they're not just for people, you know, that are athletes. You know, they're people for just trying to keep healthy knees up. What did you do for 4 years in Naval Academy prior to BUDS? I want to do construction. Well, I didn't do construction. I studied my ass off a lot. I played rugby, and I did extra workouts on top of rugby to prepare for BUDS. And that took me a couple of years to actually become a good candidate. But I got an article in there that talks about my journey. And it is riddled with failure. Let me tell you how failures can drive success. This is a good article for you guys to read that, you know, probably just need to hear that not everybody's journey is pain-free and easy. You know, when you look back, you're almost proud of those failures. You know, you're proud of like, well, I could have done a little bit better on that preparation for sure. As a coach, I try to go from that angle. But I will tell you this, that, you know, gutting through some of those poor performances and failures and getting stronger and getting better and getting smarter and taking tests better, you know, all of those things were instrumental in just creating some resilience for me personally. But before the academy, in high school, I always worked manual labor jobs, did landscaping, worked in a watermelon patch, and loaded up semi trucks full of watermelons. That was some good work. Not much money, but good work. Stu, do they still ask coast preference? Well, not necessarily in that way. Whenever you get to put in your dream sheet, they call it, for, you know, post SQT, like it used to be at after pool comp dive phase, they would ask you what your dream sheet would be. And if you wanted West Coast teams, you'd put 1-3-5-7. If you wanted East Coast teams, you put 2-4-8-10. And that just let them know you're asking for the East Coast, right? Or you're asking for the West Coast, depending on odd or even numbers. But yeah, they'll ask you your preference. But in the end, they try to get you your preference, but they also try to, or they have to deal with the needs of the Navy. So at worst, you'll get your coast. Sometimes, once in a blue moon, I've seen people, you know, ask for East Coast SEAL teams and get a West Coast SDV team. Right? Had every now and then that happens too. When I'm swimming CSS, when I kick, I bring my feet to my belly. Yeah, you shouldn't bring them up that high. And I open them up and quick. Is that okay? No. Have I seen you swim before, Alex? If not, I should have or would have corrected that high knee. Like there's no need for your knee to break parallel or perpendicular to your hips, right? So you shouldn't bring your knee all the way up to your belly. That's way too high. In fact, kind of weakens the kick because you're starting it a lot from your hips and you tend to miss that whip kick from the knee down when you do that. So what I do is I bring my knee up. Like if I was doing this, okay, so like pretend this is my knee, you know, and I'm trying to kick. So if you bring your knee up and it's 90 degrees from your hip, right? I tend to bring my knee up here, but I do a harder whip kick from the knee down. So I try not to bring it up so high because that tends to get in the slipstream and just slow you down. And it's not very powerful coming from your butt and hamstrings on the front leg, and that back leg usually works pretty well. But you can be a lot more powerful with your kick by not making it so wide. There's no reason for you to do the splits when you do a scissor kick. So same with a breaststroke kick. A lot of times people will go really wide on their breaststroke kick. It's a whip kick from the knee down. And you don't need to open your legs up so wide for either one. If you send me a video, I'll show you. In fact, tomorrow I will show you some really good kicks, because I've been using my underwater camera. And I just posted some on TikTok and Instagram as well of a really solid kick. But I think these were with fins, and I did one recently without fins as well. Are the only free workouts you do the ones in the morning? Well, yes, I have a schedule, and I don't have all day to train. So I do workouts in the morning. Put it this way, I don't do any local workouts, like one-on-one personal training. I don't do any of that. I do group training first thing in the morning. They're free for those who want to serve. I don't even, be honest with you, I don't even invite people that are not wanting to serve, just because I don't have space for people that wanted to just come get free workouts. Everybody who comes join my workouts are planning to serve in some fashion, military, law enforcement, firefighter, and getting in better, or spec ops, and they're getting better in shape to do that. So I do have some afternoon ones that I don't publish, but you have to make some morning ones first before you find out those afternoon ones, because sometimes I'll go swim, and some guys that need extra help swimming, I will help them with swimming at lunch. Sometimes in the afternoon, I may run and lift again, depending on how much coaching I was doing that day. So it kind of depends on the day, actually, and my schedule. So, but 6 days a week, 2 hours a day, I'm doing free workouts. So what's that? 12 hours a week of free workouts? Can't argue with the price. If it doesn't fit your schedule, I'm not sure what to tell you. Make it fit your schedule. Let's see. Looking for more questions here. Somebody asked about socks for boot camp. And I will tell you this. You will get issued socks at boot camp. You might be able to bring some socks with you at first, and your running shoes, maybe. Can't remember how that actually works. I'll talk to the guys about it to confirm. But my advice is this, especially if you're going to be wearing boots. Whatever issue sock they give you, use that, you know, in your boot, because then that's important to be everybody looking alike. Then, or if you just bring white tube socks, that's fine too. That's fine. But underneath, I tend to wear a very thin polyester rayon blend sock that just acts as another layer of skin. So whether I'm wearing boots or running shoes or whatever, it's a almost like a thin little liner, little pantyhose liner almost, within that sock. And I use that all through Buds with crappy boots. I mean, these were Vietnam era jungle boots that you had to break in. Nowadays, they're like running boots, and there's like running on a new pair of shoes, just a little higher top version of it, which is great. I love the Bates and the Nike Combat Gen 2 boots. They're awesome. Very light, probably preventing injuries as we speak. But I always wore a very thin sock underneath that and never got a blister. So it's very helpful for blister, foot care, and all that stuff. For me, I would say you need to pick a sock that is going to do that for you. And that is not create blisters. And if you ever look at the issue socks that they allow you to wear in the military, they have those thin dress socks you would wear with a dress uniform, whether they're black or white for whites or khaki colored. They have dress socks that are that rayon blend, polyester rayon blend, no cotton in it. You just got to look on the back what it's made out of. Pretty much if you light a match to it and it goes poof, you got the right pair of socks because you don't want any cotton in it. All right. What are we looking for? Any more questions? If you guys read the description of that of this video, you'll see some articles in there that I talk about stretching. That is very, very important. Just one, to see some of the science behind stretching and the benefits it gives you, but also the tactical advantages it gives you with post-rucking events or swimming and treading and streamlining and all that stuff that you're going to need if you're, especially if you're doing any type of future aquatics training in your job. So in a nutshell, don't skip mobility day. In fact, that's a good one. I'm going to share this one with you because this one has been life changing, not only for me, but for my guys who just needed a little bit more, need a little bit more focus on flexibility and mobility to help them with a wide variety of issues: swimming with fins, streamlining, treading, you know, just post running pain, things like that. So I read this article. Where do I need to move to work out with y'all? We are in Maryland. My advice is, if you're ever just coming here, just come here for a week visit, you know, stay in a hotel or an Airbnb or something and just see if you like it. I would hate for you to move down here, find a place to stay, find a place to work, and then, you know, it's not meeting your needs. Or your schedule gets all jacked up because your job doesn't want you to show up, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. You need to be there earlier. So, just come visit for a week, see if you like it, meet some of the guys. You might find a place to stay with some of them. Some of those guys are looking for roommates as well, but I am not a, travel agent. I'm in Severna Park, Maryland. Closest airport is BWI, Baltimore Washington International, and there are Airbnbs throughout the area. If I have a pull-up pyramid to do, I have time and have only time for the 1 to 10 part in the morning. We're doing the 10 to 1 part in the evening. Or do I do 1 to 10, 10 to 1 again? You know, it's all about daily volume for me. You know, if you only have time to hit the 1 to 10 first thing in the morning, get it done, right? And then later on the day, do the 10 to 1. But you're going to want to warm up a little bit before you start off with a 10 to 1 section. Because it's kind of a cool down if you think about it. You know, the 1 to 10 is a warm up and a max out, theoretically. You know, if you can max out at 12, then it's not really a max out, but just keep going up till you max out is what I would do. And then hit the 10 to 1 later in the day. Another option is, depending on what exercise you need to work on, take everything else out, but maybe one other exercise, rest with abs or something like that. So let's say you need to work on your pull-ups. So instead of doing a pull-up, push-up, sit-up, dip, and run every set pyramid, just do the pull-ups, pull-ups and abs, and get yourself up, get yourself down, see how fast you can do it. You might be able to get that done in 20 minutes versus, and then save all the other stuff for later and get that done on the back end. It's up to you. You know, it's up to you how you want to mix it up. But in the end of the day, do the math on how many reps you have, how many miles you have, and just get that done. At the end of the day, it's really about accumulating volume. Good question. Do I prefer dynamic over static stretching before workout or runs? Great question. In fact, I'm writing an article about that right now. Well, you know, I just read a study that it's largely dependent on the individual, right? So for me, I prefer warming up with a jog. If I'm doing legs, I'm going to do a little 1 to 10 half pyramid of squats. So we would call that a dynamic stretch, right? You're doing an actual movement. That's a dynamic stretch. So I'm going to do squats mixed with, you know, maybe a 50-meter jog in between. Maybe throw in some butt kickers, you know, leg swing, stuff like that during those 50 meters. And so, yes, I would do a dynamic stretch warm up, then do my lifts, and then do a static stretch on the back end. That's how I do it. Now, if I'm just stretching for a day and I'm not doing anything else other than cardio, I will use my cardio as my warm ups. And then, like, I'll go for 5 minutes of cardio. And then I'll do 5 minutes of stretching at a certain section of my body, like from the knees down. Then I'll get back on the cardio. Go for 5 minutes, come back, and hit knees to hips. You know, hit that section again, you know, for 5 minutes. And I get back on the cardio. And then I'll go hips and lower back. Do that for 5 minutes. You know, and just go back and forth. So I will use static stretching as a primary part of my workout mixed with something that keeps my body warm. So some form of cardio, biking, elliptical, rowing, you know, all of those are very helpful. But typically, I'll warm up with dynamics, cool down with static with my workouts. Sometimes I will do some static stretches after a mile run, though. I will tell you this. I got big calves and legs, and I need to stretch those things just a little bit more, I think, than the average person. Just because my calves hurt when I start running, and I need to warm up for a mile and then stretch my calves, and then I'm 100% ready to go. So I think it really is kind of dependent on the person and what you really need to loosen up. Do you recommend stretch day or putting it in daily before and after workout? Both. So I actually do a mobility day that I just explained a few seconds ago, about 5 minutes on cardio, 5 minutes off stretching. And then we follow that up with all the pool skills that we need mobility for: treading, underwater swims, streamlining, technique stuff, drown proofing. So it actually has a use that is very effective for people learning those strokes. Because I've seen people fail tread tests primarily because they were not mobile enough to do treading in their hips, knees, and ankles. So we do both. I stretch before, I stretch after, I stretch throughout the day. Like right now, I'm just standing up at my stand-up desk. Before this, I was sitting down writing. And as soon as I got up, I was like, "Whoo! It's leg day today." So I feel like I did legs. So I got up, stretched on my stairs for a few minutes, and then decided, yeah, I'm not going to sit down again for the next hour. I'm going to do this podcast standing up. And so I just spread it throughout the day as well. So it is constantly on my mind. And if you're at all a little bit self-aware of what's going on internally in your body, you'll know when you need to stretch, right? If it hurts to sit down, or if, you know, especially on a leg day, or, you know, when you're sitting down for a while and you get up and your hips are stiff, you know, you need to go stretch those hips. So there you go. So what advice would you give someone training for phase two crew selection for the Air Force? Just same as I would anybody, you know, just make sure you don't have any weaknesses going into that selection. You know, whether that is treading, water confidence, buddy breathing with a snorkel, underwater swimming, be able to load bear, you know, with rucking, you know, all the PT, of course, you know, be able to mix swimming with PT. That's a big one too. Lots of flutter kicks on the pool deck, lots of push-ups. Then you swim back to back to back. That's tough. So yeah, just be able to do it all, but know that if you leave any weakness undeveloped, it will be exposed immediately. So that's what I would advise. Is yoga a good way to stretch? Absolutely, 100%. I personally love yoga-based stretching. In fact, I don't necessarily like yoga classes, and I be honest with you, I just don't have the patience for yoga classes. They're kind of fun if I have some buddies with me, but it's just me. You know, yoga itself is great. I love it. In fact, I incorporate as many yoga-based stretches as I can do into my mobility days. In fact, if you really think about it, my mobility days looks like a spin class and a yoga class had a baby. So instead of an hour-long bike class and an hour-long yoga class, I do 5 minutes of biking, 5 minutes of stretching for an hour. So I combined both of those things, had a dumpster baby, and here we go. I created my own mobility day workout. Hey, do you have any, ever had your guys tread water with bricks? Yes, all the time. We use bricks, we use medicine balls, we use weights, we use, here's a really good one. We'll use an empty water jug. It's a 5 gallon water jug that you hold up, try to tread like this. Starts off at like 40 pounds, but about every, takes about 25 seconds for it to drain. So, but it gets lighter, you know, almost at a, you know, pound and a half per second as you do it, but it's hard. Those first 10, 15 seconds are tough, especially if you're doing it with no hands. Sometimes you can hold it up with one and let the other arm help you. But yes, we will do weighted treads quite often. Hey, Stu, any recommendations for recovery, hydration, and other supplements for 40 plus 30? Thanks. I mean, everything that we've been talking about with stretching, absolutely. That's for me, that is my recovery tool. My secondary recovery tool, and probably primaries, the two primaries, or a good night's sleep and a good meal or two that day. Hydration, water, unless I'm sweating profusely, and then I will add electrolytes into that water mix. I use everything from, you know, Element to Liquid IV. What else is out there? Drip Drop. You know, all these rehydration drinks that are basically just sodium, a little bit of potassium in there to help you. Only if you're sweating profusely. If you're not sweating, don't even, just drink water. Let's see. Yeah, I don't really do a whole lot of supplements. I mean, I got some vitamin D here, vitamin C. That's about it. Do you do any stretching prior to swimming or just jump in the water and start swimming? I jump in and start swimming, but I will find that after a lap or two, I need to stretch my triceps. I need to stretch my lats. I need to stretch my hips and legs, hamstrings. If I'm doing breaststroke, stretch my inner thigh. You know, so I tend to warm up a little bit, get the blood flowing, and see what needs stretching. 9 times out of 10, it's lats and triceps for freestyle swimming. But I will also stretch my, you know, hips and hamstrings if I'm doing scissor kick stuff or breaststroke kick. Can you add water treading drills to channel spoke? With many spec ops people who that was their downfall. I'm not really sure what that means, but the way we add treading drills is every set of swimming that we do, if you suck at treading, I'm going to have you rest for that 100 or 200 yard swim set with 30 seconds of treading. So that is your rest. So that is how we add treading to it. We'll do a big tread session on mobility day, which is usually Wednesday or Thursday of our week. We'll do that mobility day that I spoke of, and then we'll do something similar in the pool. We'll do 5 minutes of treading followed by 5 minutes of stretching, foam rolling on the pool deck just to get people into that egg beater pose. Or if they're doing scissor kicks, we'll stretch, you know, hamstring type stuff like in a hurdler stride type pose as well. So 9 times out of 10, people who cannot tread need to work on their mobility. And if you haven't read that article about treading and mobility, you need to read this, because treading might be a mobility issue. And it shows you the stretches that we do right here. Check this out. Stretching might be treading might be a mobility issue. Check it out. It's one of my best coaching aha moments of the last 2 years. When I was working with people who had failed a tread test, and I took it personally that they failed. It wasn't like they got kicked out of anything. It was just a tread test that they were trying to go do some extra training for the summer. I started to realize that they understood the process of treading. They just weren't getting effective kicks. So instead of a kick of 100% of your ability, they were missing about 60% of it due to immobility. Let's see. All right. You guys got any more questions? Because I'm about to have to call it quits this morning. If I did miss your question, sorry about that. I don't think I did. Just send me a question to stu@stusmith.com. You can also go to stusmithfitness.com, check out some of these latest articles I've been putting up here for you to read. They're all in the article section, but there's also programs over there. You use a live 15 coupon code for sticking around this long on my live Q&A. You'll save 15% with live 15 over there at Stu Smith Fitness. There you go. All right. So I appreciate you guys sticking around. If you guys would, punch that like button and go over to TikTok if you're or my Instagram if you want to see a lot of CSS critique videos. I post them over there. I'm trying to pull some of those from TikTok over to my YouTube shorts So make that a little bit easier for you as well. If you don't like the TikTok app, that's cool. But a lot of people over there on TikTok getting some immediate help with some of those issues that I have up there. It's just nothing but CSS critiques. And, you know, as far as like hunting and pecking through other websites, like this YouTube channel has probably 700 videos on it. You know, I probably have 150 CSS videos on there, but you gotta find them. Whereas over on TikTok and Instagram, for the most part, all the reels over there, there's a lot of CSS videos. So check those out if you need help with the CSS. And tomorrow we will do some live critiquing of people's submitted videos for you. All right. So I appreciate your time, folks. I will be back tomorrow, 9:30 East Coast time, and we can chat again then. Until then, have a good one. We'll see you.